Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Bibliophobia, A Memoir, is Sarah Chahia's debut memoir and a work of literary self-examination by a critic and professor whose life has been shaped, unsettled, and sometimes endangered by reading. Rather than offering a conventional celebration of books, Chahia studies the ambivalence of literary attachment, why some books comfort, why others wound, and why the most formative reading experiences can be difficult to revisit. The memoir blends personal narrative with literary criticism, using books as points of pressure through which questions of depression, identity, memory, race, belonging, and intellectual formation emerge. Its central idea is that reading is not always benign or therapeutic. Books can become life ruiners, works that enter the mind with such force that they alter a reader's relation to the world and the self. The result is a memoir about reading as intimacy, dependence, fear, and survival, written against simpler claims that literature automatically heals or improves us. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a memoir that resists sentimental ideas about the goodness of reading. Bibliophobia is distinctive because it challenges one of the most familiar assumptions in literary culture that reading is inherently enlarging, soothing, or morally improving. Chahia does not reject the value of books, but she refuses to treat them as harmless objects of comfort. The title itself signals this refusal. Fear of books is not presented as ignorance or anti-intellectualism, but as a response to experiences in which reading has become too intimate, too exposing, or too difficult to control. This stance gives the memoir its critical edge. Instead of writing a love letter to literature, Chahia asks, what happens when love for books becomes entangled with distress, compulsion, and self-interrogation? The book, therefore, occupies a space between bibliophilia and bibliotherapy. It acknowledges the companionship that literature can offer while questioning the cultural pressure to make reading appear redemptive. This makes the memoir especially relevant in a climate where books are often discussed as identity markers, lifestyle objects, or tools for self-care. Chahia restores risk to the act of reading. Her point is not that books are bad, but that serious reading can have consequences that exceed pleasure, taste, or improvement. Secondly, life ruiners is books that permanently alter emotional and intellectual orientation. One of the memoir's most memorable concepts is the life ruiner. A book that does not merely impress a reader but reorganizes the way the reader understands experience. The phrase is intentionally paradoxical. A life ruiner can be great, beloved, and necessary, yet still disruptive enough to feel dangerous. Chahia uses this idea to describe the way certain books lodge in memory as unresolved events rather than completed experiences. They remain active long after the first reading, shaping emotional reactions, ethical attention, and the stories a person tells about herself. This concept is useful because it moves beyond the standard language of favorite books or influential books. Influence can sound calm and admirable. Ruin suggests disturbance, dependency, and loss of innocence. In Chahia's account, reading is not a clean transfer of wisdom from page to mind. It can expose contradictions that a reader was not prepared to face, or intensify feelings already present but unnamed. The Life Ruiner also explains why rereading can become fraught. Returning to a formative book may mean returning to an earlier self, with all the vulnerability and confusion attached to that period. The concept turns literary criticism into a study of psychic aftermath. Thirdly, the bluest eye as a model for reading that reshapes race, selfhood, and belonging. Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye holds a central place in accounts of bibliophobia because it exemplifies the kind of book Chahia calls a life ruiner. The significance is not simply that Morrison's novel is powerful, but that it creates a lasting problem for the reader who encounters it at a formative moment. For Chahia, the book becomes tied to questions of racial perception, beauty, alienation, and belonging. Its force lies in making visible forms of damage that are social as well as intimate. That kind of recognition can be clarifying, but it can also be destabilizing because it changes the reader's understanding of the world she must continue to inhabit. The memoir treats this encounter as more than an episode of literary appreciation. It becomes a case study in how reading can produce knowledge that cannot easily be separated from pain. Chahia's difficulty in returning to the book underscores the memoir's broader argument. The deepest reading experiences are not always those we can calmly revisit. Some works remain powerful precisely because they continue to threaten emotional equilibrium. By centering this kind of encounter, Bibliophobia shows how a novel can become part of a reader's moral and psychological history. Fourthly, depression and suicide are treated through form rather than simple confession. Bibliophobia includes difficult material about depression and suicidal crisis. But its method is not simply confessional. Chahia's personal history is filtered through the structures of reading, criticism, memory, and avoidance. This matters because the memoir is not organized around the expectation that trauma can be neatly narrated and resolved. Instead, books become a way to approach experiences that may resist direct explanation. Literature offers language, analogy, and companionship, but it does not function as a cure in any uncomplicated sense. This is where the memoir pushes back against easy versions of bibliotherapy. Chihaya understands that books can help a reader survive by making loneliness more articulate or by giving form to otherwise inchoate feelings. Yet she also shows that reading can intensify distress, sustain obsessive patterns, or make certain emotions harder to escape. The memoir's treatment of mental health is therefore intellectually cautious. It neither romanticizes suffering nor reduces books to medicine. Its honesty lies in the refusal to separate literary life from psychic life. For a reader, this approach can be demanding because it asks for attention to ambiguity. The same book may be shelter, mirror, trigger, and wound. That complexity is central to the work's seriousness. Lastly, literary criticism becomes a method for examining the self rather than escaping it. Chihaya's background as a literary critic shapes the memoir's form. Bibliophobia does not use books as decorative references or as a list of cultural credentials. Instead, criticism becomes a way of thinking through personal history with discipline and pressure. This produces a hybrid texture. Analytical attention to texts is inseparable from attention to memory, identity, and emotional survival. The memoir asks what criticism can do when the critic cannot pretend to be detached from the material. In that sense, it complicates the usual opposition between scholarly distance and memoiristic vulnerability. Chihaya's reading life is neither a private refuge nor a purely professional archive. It is the medium through which she understands how she has been formed. This approach also clarifies why the book appeals to readers interested in both literature and life writing. It shows that criticism can be intimate without becoming careless, and memoir can be intellectually rigorous without becoming cold. The method depends on close attention to the afterlife of reading, how a book persists in thought, how it changes emotional vocabulary, and how it exposes hidden structures of desire, fear, and identification. Bibliophobia stands out because it treats interpretation as an existential practice. In conclusion, Bibliophobia is best suited to readers who want memoir to do more than recount experience in chronological order. It will especially interest people drawn to literary criticism, essays about reading, mental health narratives, and accounts of identity formation through art. Readers who expect the comforting celebration of books may find it sharper and darker than typical bookish memoirs, but that is also its chief value. Chihaya offers a practical intellectual benefit. She gives readers a vocabulary for examining their own formative encounters with books without forcing those encounters into simple categories of healing, inspiration, or enjoyment. The idea of life ruiners is useful because it recognizes that a beloved work can be disturbing and sustaining at the same time. Compared with many memoirs about reading, Bibliophobia stands out for its refusal of nostalgia. It is not primarily about the charm of libraries, the romance of book ownership, or the pleasures of literary taste. Its subject is the cost of reading seriously, especially when books become entwined with depression, racial awareness, self-understanding, and the wish to survive. That combination of critical intelligence and personal vulnerability gives the book its force. It treats literature neither as ornament nor cure, but as a volatile relationship that can reshape a life. If you would like to support Sarah Chihaya, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.